Chapter 58. The Daimler drew up under the portico of Jan Smuts Airport, and the chauffeur opened the door for Terry and then for Manfred. While the porter removed his luggage from the boot of the Daimler, Manfred swept the car park with a quick scrutiny. So early in the morning it was less than half filled. There was a cream Volkswagen, with a Kitchenerville number plate, parked near the far end. All the line and senior managers of the Sonderditch had cream Volkswagens as their official vehicles. "The bee has come to the honeypot," thought Manfred, and smiled bleakly. He took Terry's elbow, and they followed the porter with the crocodile skin luggage into the main concourse of the airport. Terry waited while Manfred went through his ticket and immigration formalities. On the outside, she was a demure and dutiful wife, but she also had seen the Volkswagen. And inside, she was itching and bubbling with excitement. Darting surreptitious glances from behind her sunglasses, looking for that tall, broad-shouldered figure among the crowds. It seemed a lifetime until she stood alone on the observation balcony, with the wind whipping her piebald calfskin coat around her legs and blowing her hair into a snapping, dancing tangle. The long, shark-like shape of the Boeing jet crouched at the far end of the runway, and as it started forward, Terry turned from the balcony rail and ran back into the main building. Rod was waiting for her just inside the doors, and he swung her off her feet. "Gotcha!" With her feet dangling, she put her arms round his neck and kissed him. The watchers paused and smiled, and there was a minor traffic jam at the head of the stairs. "Come on," she entreated. "Let's not waste a minute of it." He put her on her feet, and they ran down the staircase, hand in hand. Terry paused only to dismiss the chauffeur, and then they ran through the car park, like children let out of school, and clambered into the Volkswagen. Their luggage was on the back seat. "Go," she said, "as fast as you can." 20 minutes later, Rod pulled the Volkswagen to a tire-squealing halt in front of the hangars at the private airfield. The twin-engine Cessna stood on the tarmac. Both engines were ticking over in readiness, and the mechanic climbed down from the cockpit when he recognized Terry. "Hello, Terry, right on time," he greeted her. "Hello, Hank. You got her warmed up already? You are a sweetie." "Filed your flight plan also. Nothing too good for my most favorite customer." The mechanic was a chunky, grizzled little man, and he looked at Rod curiously. "Give you a hand with the bags," he said. By the time they had the luggage stowed away in its compartment, Terry was in the cockpit speaking to the control tower. Rod climbed up into the passenger seat beside her. Terry switched off her radio and leaned over Rod's lap to speak to Hank. "Thanks, Hank." She paused delicately and then went on with a rush. "Hank, if anyone asks you, I was on my own today, okay?" "Okay," Hank grinned at her. "Happy landings." And he closed the cockpit door, and Terry taxied out onto the runway. "Is this yours?" Rod asked. It was 100,000 rands worth of aircraft. "Pops gave it to me for my birthday," Terry replied. "Do you like it?"
"Not bad," Rod admitted.
Terry turned upwind and applied the wheel brakes while she ran the engines up to peak revs, testing their response. Suddenly, Rod realized that he was in the hands of a woman pilot. He fell silent, and his nerves began to tighten up. "Let's go," said Terry, and kicked off the brakes. The Cessna surged forward, and Rod gripped the armrests and froze with his gaze fixed dead ahead.
Relax, Ironsides, Terry advised him without taking her eyes off the runway. I've been flying since I was 16. At 3,000 feet, she leveled out and banked gently onto an easterly heading. Now that didn't hurt too much, did it? She smiled sideways at him. You are quite a girl, he told her. You can do all sorts of tricks. You just wait, she warned him. You ain't seen nothing yet. They flew in silence until the high veld had fallen away behind them, and they were over the dense green mattress of the bush veld. I'm going to divorce him. She broke the silence, and Rod was not surprised that they were experiencing the mental telepathy of closely attuned minds. He had been thinking about her husband also. Good, he said. You think I'd have a chance with you if I did? If you played your cards right, you might get that lucky. Conceited swine, she said. I don't know why I love you. Do you? He asked. Yes. And are you? They relapsed into a contented silence until Terry put the Cessna in a shallow dive. What's wrong? Rod asked with alarm. Going down to have a look for game. They flew low over thick olive-green bush broken by vlees of golden-brown grass. There, said Rod, pointing ahead, a line of fat black bugs moving across one of the open places. Buffalo. And over there, Terry pointed left. Zebra and wildebeest, Rod identified them. And there is a giraffe. Its long stalk of a neck stuck up like a periscope. It broke into an awkward, stiff-legged run as the aircraft roared overhead. We have arrived, and Terry indicated a pair of round granite kopjes on the horizon ahead. They were as symmetrical as a young girl's breasts, and as they drew nearer, Rod made out the thatched roof of a large building standing in the hollow between the kopjes. Beyond it, a long, straight landing strip had been cut from the trees, and the fat white sausage of a windsock flew from its pole. Terry throttled back and circled the homestead. On the lawns, half a dozen tiny figures waved up at the Cessna, and as they watched, two of the figures climbed into a toy Land Rover and set off for the landing strip. A ribbon of white dust blew out from behind it. That's Hans, Terry explained. We can go down now. She lined the Cessna up for its approach, and then let it sink down with the motors bumbling softly. The ground came up and jarred the undercarriage. Then they were taxiing to meet the racing Land Rover. The man who piled out of the Land Rover was white-haired and sunburned like old leather. Mrs. Steiner. He was making no attempt to conceal his pleasure. It's been much too long. Where have you been? I've been busy, Hans. New York? What the hell for? Said Hans, surprisingly. This is Mr. Ironsides, Terry introduced them. Rod, this is Hans Kruger. Van Breeder, asked Hans as they shook hands. You related to the Van Breeders from Caledon? I don't think so, Rod murmured weakly, and looked at Terry appealingly. He is stone deaf, Terry explained, both his eardrums blown out by a hangfire in the 1930s, but he won't admit it. I'm glad to hear it, Hans nodded happily. You always were a healthy girl. I remember you when you were a little pickanin. He is an absolute darling, though, and so's his wife, said Terry. They look after the shooting lodge for Pops, Terry told Rod. Good idea, Hans agreed heartily. Let's get your bags into the Land Rover and go up to the house. I bet Mr. Van Breeder could use a drink also. and he winked at Rod. The lodge had thatch and rough-hewn timber roofing, stone-flagged floors, covered with cured animal skins and kalim rugs. There was a walk-in fireplace, flanked by gun racks, on which were displayed 50 fine examples of the gunsmith's art. The furniture was massive and masculine, leather-cushioned and low. The Spanish plaster walls were hung with trophies, horned heads and native weapons. A vast wooden staircase led up to the bedrooms that opened off the gallery above the main room. The bedrooms were air-conditioned, and after they had got rid of Hans and his fat wife, Rod and Terry tested the bed to see if it was suitable. An hour and a half later, the bed had been judged eminently satisfactory, and as they went down to pass further judgment on the gargantuan lunch that fat Mrs. Hans had spread for them, Terry remarked, "Has it ever occurred to you, Mr. Ironsides, that there are parts of your anatomy, other than your flanks, which are ferrous in character?" Then she giggled and added softly, "And thank the Lord for that." Lunch was an exhausting experience, and Terry pointed out that there was little sense in going out before 4 o'clock, as the game would still be in thick cover, avoiding the midday heat. So they went back upstairs. After 4 o'clock, Rod selected a .375 Magnum Holland & Holland rifle from the rack, filled a cartridge belt with ammunition from one of the drawers, and they went out to the Land Rover. "How big is this place?" Rod asked, as he turned the Land Rover away from the gardens and took the track out into the virgin bush. "You can drive for 20 miles in any direction, and it's all ours. Over there, our boundary runs against the Kruger National Park," Terry answered. They drove along the banks of the river, skirting sandbanks on which grew fluffy-headed reeds. The water ran fast between glistening black rocks, and then spread into slow, lazy pools. They saw a dozen varieties of big game, stopping every few 100 yards to watch some lovely animal. "Pops obviously doesn't allow shooting here," Rod remarked, as a kudu bull with long spiral horns and trumpet-shaped ears studded them with big wet ears from a range of 30 feet. "The game is as tame as domestic cattle." "Only family are allowed to shoot," Terry agreed. "You qualify as family, however." Rod shook his head. "It would be murder." Rod indicated the kudu. "That old fellow would eat out of your hand." "I'm glad you feel like that," Terry said, and they drove on slowly. The evening was not cool enough to warrant a log fire in the cavernous fireplace of the lounge. They lit one anyway, because Rod decided it would be pleasant to sit in front of a big, leaping fire, drink whiskey, and hold the girl you love.